Please silence all electronic devices.
Well, I'll just say that the crisis that we have right now in our criminal justice system and in our policing system, our law enforcement systems, clearly this does not address that.
I think we need to rethink it. I don't think that's a question that you can answer, you know, in a flash.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the bunker of Meshware in northern Wake County, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi, another work-from-home week in the books. Hope you are well, and hope you're ready for the latest installment in our conversations about what the heck is happening in the wide world of North Carolina politics. Here to review are Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello again.
Good to be back with
you.
Hello.
At our respective locations, this conversation is being taped midday. Let's begin with two pieces of legislation, criminal justice reform. The Second Chance Act was approved by House lawmakers a 119-0 vote on Wednesday. The Senate had approved it a year ago. It's an expungement bill now on the governor's desk. Then there is the First Step Act, policy that would allow judges to bypass mandatory sentences in nonviolent drug crimes. It will be in a House committee Monday. How significant is this legislation?
Very significant. It's a great to use a pun, first step. It's a recognition that the war on drugs, the sort of criminalization of poverty in North Carolina and the United States, has been a disaster. It's been devastating to communities of color. We've sort of built this prison industrial complex, and I think even folks on right and left are all realizing that it went way too far and that we've got to start moving away from that, because we're literally putting hundreds of thousands of people in a position where they can never really reintegrate into society. So they're both important first steps, but they're only first steps. This is not going to cure the issue or the problem or the crisis in that's being brought out in the streets in recent weeks. We've got a lot more work to do in sort of attacking this culture of death that's infected and afflicted our communities of color. So this is a great first step, but there's much, much more to do on the agenda if we're really going to be serious about addressing that broader problem.
And I think Rob is right. This is it's an important step. It's a first step. And, you know, what we've seen is, and this just addresses two particular issues within our criminal law, one having to do with, Jeff, as you mentioned, the nonviolent drug sentencing, and then the second Chance Act has to do with expungements of records of, you know, a young person who may have made a really stupid decision when they were 18 years old, and then, you know, should that follow them for the rest of their life, impacting where they can work, whether they can get a loan, you know, all kinds of things that occur because of that. So there was a lot of thought that the Second Chance Act has passed. It is sitting on the governor's desk. It has been 2 or 3 years at the General Assembly, so it's gotten a lot of vetting, and a lot of concerns at first have been addressed. So it's one of those, I believe, has gone through the process as we like these things to get concerns addressed so that it ends up being a really good piece of legislation.
Let me ask this quick follow-up here. Based on the conversations I've had, these are the two big criminal justice reform bills that we will see, significant bills. Categorize them however you want. But the Second Chance Act, the First Step Act, these are the two that we will see during the short session. Becky, you can go first. Is it a misstep, or are they leaving something on the table? Ought they do something else, or is this adequate for the short session as it pertains to this larger issue right now?
Well, as far as a procedure, you know, what can the General Assembly get done in the next couple weeks? I think that this is probably all they're going to be able to do during the short session. They're talking about getting out, you know, by July 4th. And so we're kind of getting down to the short rows, particularly if there is an intent to introduce a new idea, new legislation. I think we're just running out of runway for the short session. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done. It doesn't mean that there's still not a lot of work to be done. It doesn't mean that there's not an interest in moving forward with this. I think just logistically for the short session, I think, you know, we're just kind of running out of room. They're also really focusing on getting the budget in place in these times with the fallout from the COVID-19, the shutdown of the economy, those kind of things. I think from a practical logistic point of view, probably this is all we're going to be able to get done this session. From a policy standpoint, there's a tremendous amount more work to be done. As I mentioned, this recodification of the entire criminal code is something that I think they should and can get done. That bill is moving, can get done during this short session. But I think this sets it up for a lot of reforms moving forward into the long session. Probably worth mentioning that the Second Chance Act, which has gotten votes, is sitting on the governor's desk, passed both the House and the Senate unanimously. So, you know, from a refreshing standpoint, it's also nice to see everybody agreeing on not only the ideas, but the importance of it.
Well, I'll just say that the crisis that we have right now in our criminal justice system and in our policing system, our law enforcement systems, clearly this does not address that. These two bills are not going to solve that problem. There is much more work to do. I think it's more of a crisis that the General Assembly could be doing more. This General Assembly has shown itself to be a legislature that will come into session really any time it chooses to. So the artificial short session deadline to me seems like not a very strong excuse. So I think there's much more that could be done and should be done. I agree with Becky. This is not close to enough to addressing the challenges we have. And I think it's actually the Second Chance Act passed the Senate unanimously last year, and it was really held up for no good reason. It was because there were political concerns at play here. It had nothing to do with the merits of the legislation. And I think there's a lot more good merit-based legislation that probably needs to be passed, and probably sooner rather than later.
Let's head to Washington. On Capitol Hill, there was discussion about military installations named after Confederate generals. President Trump says there will not be any renaming of anything during his tenure. Meanwhile, Senator Tillis stood with the president and not with other Republican senators who backed a measure to rename military bases within 3 years. Bases like Fort Bragg, named for Braxton Bragg, a former Confederate general. I'm wondering where you both are on this issue.
I think we need to rethink it. I mean, that's the best way I can answer it. I mean, I just, you know, I don't know. I haven't studied it. I think that you have to... I don't think that's a question that you can answer, you know, in a flash. I think that there's a lot more attached to it. And, you know, what I think doesn't really matter. It's what the military personnel, what the, you know, armed services, the communities where these are located. I mean, there's a lot of things to take into consideration with that.
I think it's clear that the Army is ready to do this. Senate Republicans advanced a provision this week to specifically move in this direction, to remove names of Confederate leaders from United States military installations. Senator Tillis actually stuck with President Trump and opposed that move by Republican senators and by the military to remove these names. If you're an African-American soldier, there's no confusion about what the message that this sends when you go to a military base that's been named after someone who was a general in an army that opposed the United States. It sends a message of white supremacy and racism, and these names should have been removed a long time ago. There have been powerful opinion pieces and editorials and major newspapers across the country this week saying this is the way to go. I think it's going to happen. And I think, like so many other things in which President Trump has his head stuck in the mud when it comes to basic issues of fairness and justice in this country, he's just going to get overwhelmed at some point, as it's indicated by the fact that even Senate Republicans, who block just about anything along these lines, are ready to go along with it.
All right, let's move on. It is looking pretty much official that major components of the Republican National Convention will take place in Jacksonville, Florida, not in Charlotte, North Carolina. That includes President Trump's nomination acceptance speech, set to take place in August. 2.5 years of planning by the Queen City upended in about 2.5 weeks. There is still almost 5 months until the election, but public health and public opinion at this point appear to be on the side of the governor. As hospitalizations and cases continue to climb, I'm wondering if the departure of this massive event gives you any sense of relief.
Well, you know, I'll be glad when the arguing is over, to be honest with you. I think it's really unfortunate for the city of Charlotte, who, you know, had put literally years of planning. I think it's unfortunate for a lot of the Republicans and the Republican delegates and, you know, people who are proud and excited about their party and what they have to offer and the election coming up, that, you know, this has all been sidelined. I think that it's unfortunate that estimates of, you know, over $150 million of an economic shot in the arm is now not going to happen in Charlotte. But, you know, these are unprecedented times, and so we're seeing unprecedented things happen. And it appears that the business part of the convention will still take place in Charlotte, but not nearly with the number of people that are there. And, of course, the more people you have the hotel rooms and the restaurants and, the again, the economic engine that that provides. So, again, you know, unprecedented times, and we're certainly going to see an election cycle, I think, like no other, and these conventions are part of that. So, you ask if I'm relieved. I'm just kind of ready to get on to some other news items and glad to, I'll be happy when the decision is made and everybody can move forward. And I think that there will be continuing questions about contracts and what has to be honored and how much this is actually going to cost the city of Charlotte in the long run. So still some unanswered questions there, but I for one will be relieved when the decision is made and we can move on.
Obviously, I think the vast majority of North Carolinians are relieved because they don't want to worsen the pandemic. And this is what they put Governor Cooper specifically in office to do, to make these kinds of tough decisions. He was so calm and so deliberate about the whole thing. He didn't take the Twitter and start screaming like the president. He just said, come on, let's talk this through. Let's see what's realistic. Let's see. He was trying to help them, but he obviously wasn't going to compromise the health and well-being of the people of his state. And so they seem to have reached a point that, you know, is some compromise. I thought it was very responsible by the governor. I feel bad, frankly, for the people of Jacksonville. And it seems as if sort of the retreat of the sort of Trumpism is sort of following the retreat into the deep red states. And so he's going to have to go to Jacksonville now, to a deep red part of the country, in order to have his little event and have his little coronation. You know, I don't think there's very many people in North Carolina that are disappointed to see it go.
Well, of course, the people of Jacksonville want this. So, you know, there's that. And, I think the governor, too, I mean, he kind of, you know, set it up to fail. He really would not give specific answers on what was going to be expected. So, you know, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, the responsibility lies where it lies.
There'll be a lot of unhappy people in Jacksonville if a lot of illness comes to their city later in the summer.
Well, there's a lot of people unhappy in Charlotte.
Becky Gray, Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good weekend. Thanks.
We drop this podcast every Friday. You can get caught up on some of what happened in hashtag NCPaul. Remember to subscribe to the program if you do not already. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Feel free to pass along the program to a neighbor, colleague, family member, friend, someone who you think may just benefit from a little bit further engagement with state politics. Hope you do enjoy that weekend. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you again soon.